When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. Personally, I can't wait to get a new pair of Giannis Freak 5s. Whatever you're adding to your lineup next, head to eBay. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Just look for that blue check mark. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. It is Tuesday, October 26th. Minnesota Timberwolves are 2-1. They play the Milwaukee Bucks on Wednesday in Milwaukee. I have Britt Robson of MinPost here to join me for this episode to just kind of talk about these three games that have transpired. I think mostly what is most recently on our minds is what happened in the third game, which was a loss to those Pelicans. Britt, I literally just finished reading your column off of that game and off of what's happened thus far 5 minutes ago. So I'm excited to talk to you about it because you kind of took the cat angle very much, obviously, in your piece was about cat. I'm more in my post-game podcast focused on what Anthony Edwards had to say, which is interesting because we're both highlighting what we feel is, you know, the most important dynamic to highlight. So why for you was what Karl Anthony Towns did and did not do in that game most important?
Because he remains the most consequential player on the Wolves due to their lack of depth in terms of rim protection and guarding bigs. What's behind him is Naz Reid and Jared Vanderbilt. And that is a 20-win team if essentially that is your fulcrum in the paint. And so he's the most valuable player on the team in terms of success this season. And I was hoping and still have hope. I mean, people can evolve, but it was disappointing to see yet another game where Cat played to the refs almost right out of the gate from the opening whistle. The first time he went to, you know, the cup, Okogie got a nice rebound, perfect outlet pass, you know, half the court length. Cat caught it just over the half court line, barreled toward the basket. Valanciunas might have fouled him, but on like the first or second play in the game, it was very early in the game. And, it was a bang bang play. He kind of went up straight, but I wouldn't have been upset if he called a foul. I wasn't upset that there wasn't a foul, but Cat was. He was very upset. And, you know, I mean, or at the very least, he was beginning to initiate a pattern where he could get upset, I guess is a better way to put it.
Right.
And meanwhile, they're going back down the court and, you know, they play 5-on-4 for a while, and then the wide open three that gets missed, and D'Lo's underneath the ball for the rebound, and here comes Cat because he's finally getting back into the play, and it basically knocks it out of bounds. A joint rebound with D'Lo. There wasn't any Pelican around him, and it went from there. I mean, essentially, the first third of the column just basically talks about what happened in the first 8.5 minutes, and it is continual Cat versus the refs shenanigans. And, you know, it's what the problem with that is, having seen every single game he's ever played in the NBA, is I know how frequent these refs get in my head things are. And now they're being buttressed by things like, guerrilla battling videos pregame. And I don't care about, you know, we get a couple of whistles, it's not going to take away our new physical identity. And I didn't get in shape to, back down from anybody. It's like, it's all very troubling in terms of what it means for this team this season. Are they going to play smart? Because there's not, as much as I like the Wolves, and I do, I really like this Wolves team. I like the depth. I love the coach. but they don't have a lot of margin for error. You know, I mean, they could be a 30-win team if they let go of the rope, and they could be a 40, 41-win team, I think, if things go well. And that's a big difference. And so I think they're one less win than I would have figured them for after last night, because they should have won that game.
Right.
And it isn't just Cat, I should emphasize. I mean, D'Lo continues to play horribly.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
No, I think you bring up that first 8 minutes and 37 seconds of the game, and it's just, it's such an example of Cat being the best player of the team, being the leader of the incumbent leader of the team. And what they always say, right, is that the leader personifies the identity of the group. And that felt, that never to me had felt more true than in those first 8 minutes and 37 seconds last night, where Cat just being flabbergasted by the refs and not getting the calls, which they made bad calls. The second foul was bad. But the way he handled that so just derailed, or just it just created who the Wolves were going to be that night, from every man down the bench to the whole stadium of fans just catching on his energy, and that place blowing up with refs do suck chants. And again, I think the refs made some bad calls. I actually think they made some worse calls in the second half of the game, but it is just, it's a little bit troubling that he is that the team is personified by Cap, because I don't think it's a healthy relationship with the referees. I don't think there is an accurate balance between what Carl thinks is going on in the games and what the refs think is going on in the games. And as we all know, the refs don't care who wins the game. So there's not some inherent bias against Carl. And if it is, it's marginal, right? Where star players
and
get calls.
I mean, I believe there may be beginning, if not an established bias, because he has a reputation now in history.
100%. That second call he got because of his reputation, and because, I mean, he had been showing up the refs for 8 minutes and 37.
Because he's been baiting
them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that ref, that big dude, he was like, I'm not having it. He goes, I know if I hit you with this second foul right now, you're going to sit down on the bench. So he sat him down on the bench. Then that's not a line by the ref, but like, that's not all on the ref in that sort of way. So it was so interesting, and not to totally stray away from Cap, because you had a lot of other things I want to get to there, but it was so interesting to have Cap be the personification of the game for the 8 minutes, the 48 minutes of that game, and then to go to post game and begin to understand that the dynamic of who is or will eventually be in charge of this team is beginning to change with the emergence of Anthony Edwards, not only as a player, but just as a leader within that group. I mean, he firmly put himself in the mix as one of the leaders of this team with Cat and D'Lo, given what it's the first time he'd ever ripped on his teammates at all in a post-game press conference.
Right. And I'm not even sure it was accurate, but I think it was a statement.
Yeah.
And, you know, for readers who don't know, or listeners who don't know, he basically said that the big three were hogging the ball too much and not sharing the ball. I'm good with that. I like the idea of the big three getting 75% to 80% of the shots. And the example he gave when pressed on it, I think it might have been you or somebody else who said, well, what are you specifically are you talking about? And he said, well, Josh Okogie was wide open in the corner. Well, you know, okay. Mm-hmm. Some other side will rest their case there then. But I do like the idea that Ant wants to make the depth remain a strength and not have it be a bifurcated pecking order, not have it be there's the big three and then four, five, and six, you know. I mean, because in some respects, maybe Jaden McDaniels is four and he's a real quiet dude. And maybe Malik Beasley is five or something, or Pat Bev is five or whatever. But I mean, you get into that realm where you start to you get a real interesting assortment of people who are in that next tier. And, you know, I mean, it's the kind of thing where I don't know if Ant is heading something off or creating something, quite frankly, but I do think that, as I'll repeat myself, the margin of error is small and they need to be synergized. That team needs to get the most out of its talent because they're picking their poison between, you know, they have to generate turnovers and get points off turnovers to, you know, accommodate how terrible they are on the offensive glass. Or they have to sheerly outscore people and throw defense out the window, which is kind of what Finch did.
In the fourth, I mean,
Finch is not, and the last two halves, he's not played Okogie nor Vanderbilt very much at all in the second half because he knows the offense is way behind the defense and he's just going for firepower.
What a thing, man. I mean, how crazy is that? That the Minnesota Timberwolves offense is so far behind their defense.
Well, part of that, I mean, and I give him credit. He really did. Ryan Saunders, Tom Thibodeau, Rick Adelman, you know, name the coaches, going back, Sam Mitchell, Flip Saunders. We're going to concentrate on defense this preseason.
Right.
And then they come out and play the same old shit. You know, it's whether you think the defense is good or bad, and I know that's going to be a conversation for us later on in this podcast, but they clearly are scrappier and have an idea of what the plan is, much more than they have in previous seasons. And the cost of that, you know, cramming, you know, for a final exam of the opening day was the fact that their offense is not sorted out at all. And so, and that's very obvious. And on top of that, D'Lo sucks right now.
Right.
I mean, he's just a bad, bad player. And as the guy who has the ball in his hands, probably still even more than Cat, even despite the fact he's not playing well and Cat is, I think that that's a big factor too.
So to that end, I was just at Wolves practice and we're waiting for Finch to come over to do his media. And it was a long wait because just the last two people on the floor talking for a while were him and D'Lo, and which I think makes sense just on paper, right? Of like,
right,
you know, D'Lo's struggled. D'Lo's been open himself about the fact that he struggled.
Right.
But it was interesting that then when Finch did come over, the first thing that came out of his mouth was that it was a testy practice, and he said it in a good way because it showed that people cared. But what I don't know, I'm, you know, for listeners who don't know, we're not there for the whole practice. We're there for the end of it. I have no idea what that testiness looked like, but you know, there's different ways you can imagine it. And I'm with Finch. I don't think it is a bad thing, quite frankly.
No, it's a good thing.
It, you know,
because it was a bad loss.
Mm-hmm.
It was a loss.
That's exactly what he said.
Okay, good. And you know, and it was a bad loss because the Pelicans will be better. They're not a good team, but they'll have Zion at some point in time. And that will be exactly what this Wolves team can't handle right now. Mm-hmm. And it was a home game. I mean, they need to make hay in these, you know, out of their first eight games, seven are at home. And it doesn't get any easier than what we just went through.
Right.
Houston and New Orleans without Zion twice. That was the easy part. And so they should be 2-1. We talked about it last time we were on together, 3-0 or 2-1. We never thought 0-3 or 1-2.
Right.
You know, so it was too bad.
Yeah, and it'll be, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see on Wednesday how they respond, right? You know, and Wednesday Milwaukee, Giannis, Saturday Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets. I mean, it's going to be, as Ant put it after the game, he's like, well, now because we lost this, our backs are back up against the wall. And you have this situation where you go, you go Milwaukee, Denver, and then Orlando. And I think what like the old Wolves would do is lose those two games, right? Now you're 2-3, and then you beat Orlando, and now you're back, oh, we're 3-3, you know, they kill
Orlando. Go, okay, we're in the playoff mix, right?
Exactly. Right. And so I do think kind of these next two games will be somewhat telling of at least where they're at right now.
Right.
In, you know, in distinguishing themselves as being different from the quote unquote old Wolves. And yeah, it probably does require some testiness. I don't think just the past couple of years, I don't think they've had that. I think it's, you know, it probably has cost them. You're not going to just go into Milwaukee and just beat them. Like, you're going to beat them because it means something more to you. That sounds kind of cliche, but like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like, you're going to need to be like greater than the sum of your parts. And I think that's what just is interesting timing with it, with what Kat did in that game behaviorally, what Kat said post game, which is the same thing he said all the time of, it's all on me. It's all on me. Put it all on my shoulders.
But no specifics.
No specifics. And, you know, it's a lot.
See, that's what I want to hear. Yeah. I want to hear, I lost my head. That's, I allowed myself to get.
Yeah. He was 32. You know, when I mean, he had a statistically a great game, as you put in the column. You know, 32, 14, and 7, plus 8 with him off, minus 17, or plus 8 with him on, minus 17 with him off. Like, when you say it's all on me and you have a shiny, you know, you have a shiny stat line like that, it's just.
And what are you saying?
Right. Yeah, I know. And it, again, it's
you, what you want in that dynamic is for someone to say, oh, no, Kat, look at your line.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You didn't, you know. I'll never. The first time he pulled that was like, I think his second year in the league. I actually wrote a column about that too, where he said it's all on me, and you know, nothing. The whole game's on me. He's like in his second season. I was back in the old locker rooms, and I said, "What specifically?" Mm-hmm. He said, "Just everything. The defense. You know, what I mean." But it told me, if he had said, you know, I blew a pick and roll, I miscommunicated with somebody, I lost the dribble on something, mm-hmm. I took a shot when my teammate was wide open. Just give me something that indicates that you're not trying to use quote-unquote accountability as a coat of armor to protect you from being ripped, because that's what I suspect, and that's where I lose respect, you know?
Well, and that's the difference, Britt, between what he said, and then when Ant came in about an hour later,
right.
and Ant's entire, everything he said was all about accountability, not only accountability on himself, but honestly, he at least evenly distributed the accountability between himself, Kat, and D'Lo, and all 100% of it he put on those three. And again, like, proof will be in the pudding. I don't know what is right or wrong, but you're talking about year two from Kat, and he's been doing the same thing. It's year seven. He's done. That's what it's always done. And I just wonder, you know, is that type of leadership something that works? My inclination is to believe that the accountability tactic is better, if for no other reason than it's just different. And it's leading to this collision, and I don't necessarily mean collision in a bad way, but a collision between Kat and Ant where it could be testy or it could work, right? And that collision mm-hmm. could lead to growth, and that goes back to the being greater than the sum of your parts and being able to go into Milwaukee and get a win, beat a Denver team, those, you know, those sort of team things, and put yourself in the position that you said you were going to be in, a playoff team, right? And this has been, the pattern for years. It's the same thing every year, is playoffs this year. This is what we've changed with the defense. We've done these and this and that. And what has never changed is it being backed up in the results. And for me, glass half full, Ant saying what he said, who Ant is becoming as a player and as a leader, leads me to believe that it, for the first time, it could be different.
Mm-hmm. And also, another part of this dynamic is precisely because of their history, the Wolves are going to be taken lightly by both Milwaukee and Denver. Mm. There will be an opening. The Bucks will not be on their A game immediately. I mean, the last few times the Bucks have played the Wolves, if memory serves, mm-hmm. I mean, it hasn't ever been close. You know, And so they just don't match up well usually. But you have this scheme where if the Wolves do their thing, which is turn people over, get a lot of points off turnovers, and shoot well in the half court, you know, they can win a game. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee gives you the three. If they make those threes and they pressure the ball, yeah, the Bucks are going to get like 70 points in the paint. I mean, especially if Lopez plays. And so,
well, I think that's worth distinguishing. I think the Wolves have a shot in this game because I think full health Milwaukee crushes them because they completely tap into the weaknesses of this Wolves team, which is their size, right? And right. And when you normal Bucks, when you go Lopez at the five, Giannis at the four, Middleton at the three, Grayson Allen at the two, Holiday at the one.
I mean, Drew Holiday at the one. Yeah, I mean, that's George Hill, right?
Right. That's as big as any team in the league. And frankly, the Wolves have no shot against teams like that right now.
Unless, I mean, they go crazy, shoot lights out, and get a lot of turnovers.
But that goes back to what, like, the dynamic of the fourth quarter last night. What happened was, you know, or even the third quarter of that game, right? When Ant was going off, getting 21.
No, I know. I remain optimistic about that and fruitlessly. I mean, certainly wrongly on the facts. But I mean, it gets to a greater discussion. I think the scramble scratch aspect, getting 11 guys involved, which I know is another thing you disagree with, is something that is workable with this roster if people have their stuff together. And Finch is got his if he is as genius at inserting people as he was with McLaughlin, you know, 11th man, and some of the things he pulled in the opener, they've got a puncher's chance. But I would not. I mean, let's face it, Lopez, Giannis, and Middleton engaged. I'm not even talking playoff engaged. I'm talking about like big game engaged, or we can't lose this game engaged if they're down eight in the third quarter. I mean, if that happens and the Wolves aren't playing like right near the top of their game, then it's not going
to
happen.
Well, to wrap up my point for why they have a chance, I don't think they have a chance against the engaged Bucks. But this Bucks team is not the engaged. They're 3-1 right now, so they kind of look like who they are.
They want a ring. They want a ring. If you win a ring and you're playing in October, you really don't give a damn.
Well, there might be some of that. That showed up. They lost to Miami by 42. That showed up. But I think if you actually watch the games, I think it's less so about the engagement for them and more so about the fact that Lopez is so important that to what they do, and they don't have Bobby Portis. I mean, Thanasis is the backup center right now. He's like a Wolves big. And then they have this Mamo Kidishvili guy who's the other big, who's a rookie who does clearly. I mean, I didn't watch the game last night. I've watched the first three games. Like, this Bucks team is bad at times. And so I think the Wolves do have a window in this game. I'm not going to be shocked if they win it, because this Bucks team has Giannis at the five and is starting Pat Connaughton at the four. They are very similar to the Wolves in terms of size. And so for me, generally speaking, when I'm, you know, when I'm picking these games and I'm going to look at an opponent, I'm going to give the Wolves a really poor shot at winning any game where I think they can get physically overmatched. And that's not what this Bucks team is right now. So I think they're in it, and I think they had a test.
So you'll take the points. At the very least, you'll take the points.
Yeah, I'll take the point, and I'll say this. If D'Lo gets off the schneid.
He is so due.
Well, and man, I brought this up to Finch today at practice. I was like, that the way the Bucks defend is the type of team that D'Lo historically cooks against, right? You know, they're going to drop that big back.
Give him the mid-range,
rim,
right.
Give him the mid-range. That's what he did. Remember that Warriors game at Target Center where D'Lo
had 50? He got a career high.
Exactly. You know, so there's, I don't know. I think a lot of people, you know, you just pull up the Wolves schedule and you're looking at the next two and you're probably going LL. In a weird way, I think the Wolves have a better chance against Milwaukee in Milwaukee tomorrow than they do at home against Denver on Saturday. But if they win the Milwaukee game, now you got a little bit of a rhythm back. You're like, all right, we hit some adversity and we bounce back from it. Maybe you got a rhythm going into that game five.
Plus, I will mention that if Cat really needs to mean mug people, at least he mean mugs Jokic rather than the refs. And that's a positive.
That is. All right, but let's take a quick break. And then I do want to, let's just talk about the defense, because that's something we've gone back and forth on a lot. And we now have three games to look at. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Today's show is brought to you by TickPick. Minnesota Timberwolves basketball is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find Wolves tickets anymore, because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site. And the only one you'll ever need is your go-to for all NBA tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that the other ticket sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all of their NBA tickets. If you can find better prices for the same seats on any other ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. Visit TickPick.com/Dane Moore. My name, all one word, no spaces, today to save $10 on your first order of Wolves tickets. I heard from a handful of fans who used TickPick to purchase their tickets to the Wolves opener after hearing about it on the pod, and they found the experience to be both easier and more affordable than previous ticket sites they had been using. The Wolves do play 7 of their first 8 games at Target Center, and TickPick has you covered for all of those games. It was a blast to see fans at the opener matching the Wolves' energy on the floor on Wednesday night, and I look forward to more of that to come. Again, visit TickPick.com/Dane Moore. My name, all one word, no spaces, today to save $10 on your first order of Wolves tickets.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch down to the sole. Personally, I can't wait to get a new pair of Giannis Freak 5s. Whatever you're adding to your lineup next, head to eBay. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Just look for that blue check mark. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
All right, we are back with Britt Robson of MinPost. We're talking about where the Wolves are at 3 games into their season, 2-1. They're coming up against Milwaukee and Denver the rest of this week. Just from Britt and I sitting next to each other at the games, a point of contention in our conversations and over dinner has been about where this Wolves team is at defensively. Purely going off of statistics, the Wolves defensively are in a better spot than, I guess, what my...
Very good spot.
Yeah, good spot.
I agree with you, though, to the extent that the statistics are rosier than the reality.
What I haven't even looked it up today. Where are they at in terms of defense right now?
I don't know now. I know they were like 91-7 after 2 games.
Right, they were first.
And I don't think the Pelicans had a great offensive game last night either.
Right. Here we go. Pulling up. Great radio. The Wolves are still third in defense.
Yeah.
Third in defense, according to...
Are they under 95 or are they over 95?
93-2 with garbage time removed, which is obviously an incredible number. The question, though, is about the execution versus... The execution of the Wolves defense versus the execution of the Houston Rockets and the New Orleans Pelicans. Right. And I think the gray area here is we're seeing this scramble identity to the Wolves... around the action being what their defensive identity really is. And to some extent, I think they're doing a good job of closing out on those shots there. But also, I think the Pelicans and the Rockets just missed a lot of shots as well, where maybe against a more even average opponent, a lot more of those threes are hit. That number isn't 93-2 anymore. And we have something more towards the middle of the pack, which would still be a good, still be a good number, but
right.
We're not at a point to even really care all that more. For me, I don't really look at lineup data or give too much credence to any of that for
I usually say 20 games is where we really have a good idea. So, yeah, the question is, what are we seeing with our eyes in terms of what is working defensively and what is not? What have you seen through these first three?
Well, I think that when they have the really active defenders on the court, that the generally lackadaisical defenders play better.
Sure.
I think they're a catalyst. I think that Okogie in particular, especially in the first game and a half, played extremely well. I thought he played a good 4 or 5 minutes last night. And then, you know, it was toast. Now some of it is, and Vanderbilt, I should mention, had a great second half, or maybe the first half or third quarter of the second game. I can't remember right when, but the guy had like 8 rebounds and 3 steals in 12 minutes, only got 12 minutes.
Only got nine minutes last night, too.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, and Okogie got like 3 minutes after halftime last night. Yep. They have been relegated to the bench. And I understand his reasoning, but I also think that leads back to what he said in Vegas during Summer League. We are what we are, and what we are is really an offensive team. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a little worried that that offense is not gelling as easily as he hoped. He thought it would be self-sustaining. I think he realizes it needs to have a little more attention paid to it in terms of
a little
rotation.
Bit more kindling. I mean, that's why he chose to go with Malik Beasley last night.
Malik Beasley
over the other options would have been Jared Vanderbilt or Patrick Beverley, which are
right.
It's kind of like a spectrum there, right? Of like Beasley's the offense.
And if you throw in Torian Prince, you basically have the entire spectrum.
Right.
I mean, you
point.
Really do to mm-hmm. some extent. And so it is kind of weird. He does. I mean, but think about what we just said too, though. So what I love about this roster right now is that there's so many possibilities. Yeah. And so you get Finch's thinking without him telling you what he's thinking totally. To some extent. Yeah. And so, and that's fun. You know, I am a little disappointed. I mean, they went drop back.
Yep.
With Valanciunas, and he got 23 rebounds and 22 points.
Well, that's
what could, I mean,
yeah.
We might as well just let him roam free and see if we can deny him the ball and get some points at the other end at this point.
Well, that's an interesting thing about it. I think most teams, right, when you're just presented with the, you know, you kind of think about it if you're the coach coming in of, you know, how are we going to defend pick and rolls? You ask yourself, who's going to be the initiator and who's going to be the big, right? And to the Pelicans, you know, you go, okay, it's Devontae Graham and Jonas Valanciunas.
And JV, right?
Yeah, so we're going to care, you know, we're going to care more about the paint. That's not Steph Curry. That's not, you know, Damian. Like,
right.
It's a situation to play drop in and not aggressively. Yet, drop has this weird element to it where it leaves you very susceptible for the rolling big, even if they're not getting the ball, to get the offensive rebound.
And if Cat is the guy, especially.
Totally. Exactly.
I mean, it's gotten to the point already.
It's a smart strategy. I mean, if Cat knows how to do it, which we have, again, 6 years of.
We had like 5 weeks last season and 3 games this season to know that he's already better at the level than he is dropping back.
Well, It's what he wants to do and thus engages him more. It doesn't even matter if it's the right or wrong tactic. Again, a lot of coaches against New Orleans when they're facing Valanciunas will always have their center play back because Valanciunas isn't much of a pop threat. It's like the obvious move. But with Cat, he falls out of engagement once you take him out of the action. That's why if we're talking about these three games, I thought the first game was really good against the Rockets. You know, you have Cat is the most important piece. He is engaged. When you are playing more aggressive, you're putting him up at the level. He's scrambling out there. He loves it. And
a few times during that game last night, he was allowed to play at the level on pick and roll.
That was,
and he loved it.
And that's what I'm curious about. If he just has the ability to freelance that to some degree or not, because that is different than previous seasons where,
yes,
where it would just be exclusively drop back. But it's very apparent to me that they just need to do whatever Cat wants to do, not because Not because we don't need to further feed this martyr complex that is going on, that is already being wetted by the refs and all those sort of things.
Right.
But from a defensive standpoint, you have to, because you need him. They need him.
And to be fair to Cat, that's not uncommon among mediocre defending bigs in the NBA.
Right.
If they're, you know, I mean, Jokic gets to play whatever he wants to play. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Embiid can really, you know, I mean, at some point, you do have to cater to Cat, but the flip side is he's got to come through. I mean, and what Finch did in terms of the drop back, I thought, you know, was not a good decision, and then he compounded it. I thought Finch had his worst game last night, quite frankly.
Yep.
In terms of
a coach what you just said you loved. So
I know. Well, I do. I mean,
I know. I'm not even putting that on you. I'm just saying.
But I just think that I didn't like his decision making on a lot of things. I still have no idea why he uses Taurean Prince the way he uses him. I don't know how he views Prince. Mm-hmm. He sort of has a Swiss Army knife. I mean, what he says most often is he likes Prince to guard the big wings, you know, the Paul Georges or the Brandon Ingrams in this case.
Which isn't a great need on this roster, bizarrely, with what Okogie and Vando and McDaniels all can do that.
Exactly right. And so at the same time, the guy's making $13 million a year, and he loves his new ankles and wants to get 20 minutes a night, or he's not going to be a happy camper, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if we know that yet. I mean, I don't think we've...
Oh, I don't think... There are guys... The two guys that Finch has to worry about in the rotation are Prince and Beasley. Yeah. Because they're veterans, they're getting paid, and yet they are not established veterans. Mm-hmm. They are not guys that if they go to another team, they're automatically in the eight-man rotation.
Right. Well, interesting thing was the first Pelicans game, you know, J-Mac plays in the fourth quarter and is as response, doesn't play all first three quarters, and then plays the whole fourth quarter as responsible for the win as anyone outside of Cat, right? And and so then you're playing the same opponent. The natural inclination is to again go to McLaughlin. So
which he did.
He went to McLaughlin before he went to Prince, which is oddly kind of a choice given.
Which you called that.
I I wanted that. This is funny because what I was going to say, I wanted that. I mean,
you know, and that, it never occurred to me that was the decision. I mean, you're the rotation guy. I'm always looking at matchups, you know. I'm saying, what can match up here? And you're looking at what is this guy's normal spot in the rotation. If you play McLaughlin, who is the odd man out? Who doesn't have the musical chair,
right?
You know? And so
the thing is, you have to choose. The reason I'm the rotation guy in this sense is you're playing 11 guys. So you are rotations.
Right.
Some, you know, rotations aren't the most important thing in the world. They become more important when you're trying to play 11 dudes and you're trying to manage personalities, because what happened in the second game against the Pelicans is by playing McLaughlin all 12 of those minutes, Beasley got pinched because they brought D'Lo back in to close the game.
And he was not happy.
And he was not happy. And Beasley, you know, so Beasley gets pinched in that sort of way. Now, in the next game, you wanted to, I'm assuming Finch read some of those Beasley flares. And so he's then posed with a different choice of which wing J-Mac's going to be replacing if he's going to be playing next to D'Lo or Pat Bev, right? Now you're a two guard. So it ended up being Taurean Prince. Prince didn't check in until like 3 minutes into the second quarter, which is very different than what his, you know, what his spot had been. So this is why I say I don't want it to be an 11-man rotation. I don't think that is the best idea. Right. I understand.
Because of chemistry.
Yeah. Chemistry.
Yeah.
And being able to play guys enough minutes to catch a rhythm. Like I generally skew shorter rotation. I know every situation, you know, is its own, but I would be surprised, I think, if Finch doesn't eventually get it down to 10. And the most obvious one would be McLaughlin, because he was pretty clearly 11th, you know, coming in. But I think Finch loves McLaughlin.
He does.
And I think there's reason to love McLaughlin.
But
who's going to, you know, it's either, you know, you're going to marginally pinch a bunch of other guys, or you're going to have to take Prince out entirely.
Well, you know, he more than marginally pinched D'Lo in that fourth quarter.
True.
And maybe that's what some of that conversation was about. Right. Is, well, you know,
D'Lo played because short if minutes you have, two games in a row, and there was still the pinch.
If you have D'Lo, if you explain to D'Lo, we're going to get you off by getting you going with the second unit, which needs your organization.
Right.
I mean, D'Lo will probably see through that. He's no fool. But it would still be, that would be one way to deal with it. And I think it's not, D'Lo knew that he had the trump when Ryan Saunders was coach. Mm. I think Chris Finch is the most powerful person in the Wolves organization right now. I'm not lying. I think that he is more powerful than Sachin Gupta. I think he's more powerful than Mark Lowry. I think that right now, if Chris Finch wants something to happen,
right,
that's probably what will happen. And so I think D'Lo is also smart enough to know that. So that's actually one of the reasons I like the long rotation, because Finch feels to me like a guy who, to be honest with you, this is what I was going to write about until Cat's game last night. I was going to write about Finch versus the baggage of managing stuff when you're a coach, mm-hmm. which is agents, which is entourages, which is social media. Everybody's, all these forces as, hey, you're not getting this, you are getting this, or, and you have a bunch of guys, the distance between your fourth most talented player and your ninth most talented player is really not much and usually is situational.
Right.
And yet Finch is somebody who prides himself on being transparent, on being winning first, and on being accountable. And so I love that clash between the way things are done in the NBA and the way Chris Finch wants to run his rotations.
Let's make it clear that no other teams are playing 11.
I think it's a fascinating case study because it's a rare roster that way. It's what it Rosas left him, you know. He doesn't have a power forward. If he had a set guy in every position,
right,
then you're really, you know, then you're really, you're basically asking people, are you going to be second unit or third unit?
Mm.
And that begins to grade on people. Whereas now, if you say, are you going to be in the second rotation this time, right, or the third rotation the next time, people can talk themselves out of saying, I'm not a third stringer. It's just the way things are going right now.
Right.
And so
I think it's two birds sort of thing, right? Yeah. Like, he's keeping more people happy, which is a good thing, by having them in the rotation, while also it is a tactic for solving the lack of a position on the roster almost completely. Like,
and it's a motivational tactic because it is about accountability.
Right.
And if a player says, you know, fuck you, I'm not doing that.
Right.
You just say, okay, well, you know, you forget who's currently the most powerful person in this organization.
Right.
And let me know when you change your attitude. I'll put you back at the third string. You know,
what do you think to that end? What do you think about Malik Beasley thus far and his attitude? I guess I'll go first. I think he's been perturbed. He got pinched. He hasn't been playing a ton of minutes. I've liked what I've seen out of Malik Beasley in terms of focus, understanding that his role is different on this team now. And he's trying to find it. He hasn't found it. He's still missing a lot of shots short. That rhythm isn't really there offensively, but I like the work that it feels like is going on with Malik Beasley, and I'm hopeful that can catch up and, you know, pay dividends, but curious if there's room for that to be able to happen within the context of this roster. I think he's you mentioned Jaden McDaniels is fourth in the pecking order before. I think it's actually still Malik Beasley, or should be. And it's just so bizarre because he's, you know, he might be the fourth, but he's another one-way player and he's undersized. It's like, it's the perfect encapsulation of the inherent flaw within this as I've called it, you know, a broken roster.
Right. Well, I think that there's no question in my mind that McDaniels is fourth, just because Chris Finch loves him and does not back down from the idea that he might be able to groom him into Scottie Pippen. And so I'm not taking it.
I love McDaniels.
Giving my perspective. It sounds like a rebuttal rather than a positing. But I do think that since we're on Malik, I think I have a pretty good sense of Malik in that he's a very transactional guy.
Right.
He's somebody who says, all right, this is what I've got. I'm going to bust my ass to do it this way. But if he does not get rewarded for doing it this way, you're in trouble. You know, I mean, I really think that Malik is doing everything he possibly can to be a good teammate. And consequently, he expects to be met at least halfway. He expects, when he's not shooting well,
right,
to get ridden a little bit longer to see if he can get his stroke, that he still takes some bad angles, but he is a little bit better at getting the bad angles ironed out. And he's also just, he's always been a hustler in terms of how he's roaming around on the court, but he is even more so. It used to be that he's kind of cat-like and saying, hey, look at how much I hustle.
Yeah.
And now it's more, hey, I'm in this hustling group. You know what I mean? He seems more community-oriented on defense. And
well put.
And so he feels like somebody who's bought into the program, but it's like somebody, you know, who's been sold a set of encyclopedias. He's got A through C in his lap, and he hopes that they're good encyclopedias because he's not buying Y if that's the way it's going to go, you know? Right. And so, you know, he's somebody, I will tell you.
Britt, they got to figure it out or they got to trade him. I mean,
this may be a little bit of a jag, but I will tell you that when I heard Ant's comments last night, I thought to myself, this sounds really good to Malik Beasley.
I didn't really think about that.
If there is anybody
who
wanted somebody in a position of power to have his back, hey, people are not getting about. I mean, Malik was 1 for 7 last night, I think. Hmm. And I think that, you know, I heard, you know, remember that shot when he came down and
you wanted him to pull up?
Took that three, and I wanted him to pull up, and he did. Jim Pete just torched him on the broadcast for doing that because Ant was hot, if you recall. I mean, Ant was rolling.
Yeah.
And I get, you know, Jim Pete, I love him to death, and I respect the hell out of his insights. We just happen to disagree now. I think Malik needed to take that shot to establish that, hey.
But he hesitated, you know, on the shot, Britt. He hesitated on the shot. He was coming down.
And that was his undoing. And part of that is confidence. And that's partly what Ant was talking about. Mm-hmm. Feed that guy when you can feed that guy, because when he comes down with an open look, he's going to be able to hit that if he's confident. I think an
interesting part of it is that Finch chose him last night. So all things equal, right? He's choosing Malik Beasley over, as we put it, Jared Vanderbilt and Patrick Beverley in that spot to, you know, to close the game.
Don't forget Okogie.
Yeah. I was going to bring him up too. Like, I mean, Okogie probably looks like he's getting more of a nod, more of a hike in the pecking order, given that he's starting. But if you look at the minutes, it really is kind of, it's the big three, it's McDaniels, and then it's all things equal for that
it's next situational.
Group. Situational, yes. And, you know,
if Pat Bev, I don't want to interrupt you too much, and this will be a quick one. If Pat Bev says, hey, you need to bump me up a little on the pecking order, he'll get it.
Right.
I mean, Finch is saying right now, I love this guy because he's allowing me to do what I want. And Pat Bev knows all he has to do is ask.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic for each one of these guys because, you know, these are all basically the names we were talking about, like who's the fifth starter, right? Well, there was, you know, I think the leader in the clubhouse of the summer once the roster shook out just in public perception was it was going to be Vanderbilt, you know, just kind of right. connecting the dots of, you know, he's the power forward. Well, Vanderbilt has been low.
I think he's eighth or ninth on the team in minutes.
Right, yeah. So it's not even really close in that way. The other, I think, next natural thought was Malik Beasley would be the fifth guy. Obviously, you know, sacrificing size and defense. And so that's like kind of gotten a shot, but not really either. Then, you know, Patrick Beverley gets traded for and you're like, well, you know, that they could just go, you know, you're adding more defense with Beverley over Beasley. You could have Beverley be that fifth starter, or maybe it's the fifth closer. Kind of had that dalliance for a while. And then out of nowhere, Josh Okogie power forward has been the guy, right? So it's been interesting and a good, yet another
and
good.
He earned his second start and probably punted his fourth start with his third start.
Do you think he should start against Milwaukee?
No.
Who do you think should start?
And it's not Vanderbilt. I think it's a pretty easy decision.
Well,
I mean, if they're as big as they are.
No, but they're not.
Like, is Brook Lopez still out?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Didn't we just talk about that?
You didn't say anything about Brook Lopez. You said about Milwaukee, but it wasn't specific who they had as a starter.
Implied.
You did say Theonis has been there. Yeah. Yes, but I didn't know that meant. Does that mean Lopez is out tomorrow night?
Yeah, Lopez. Yeah, Lopez has. He played the first game, and he hasn't played the next three games.
I know, but I mean,
I asked Finch about it today, and Finch goes, "I think Lopez is out."
Oh, so well, I think he wouldn't say that. Yeah, he wouldn't say that.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure.
So, yeah. So that's why. Okay, the obvious normal Milwaukee, you have to start Vanderbilt, right? Because
absolutely,
you can't not.
But in this case, is it the who is Connaughton. Starting at the
Connaughton starting at the four?
Oh, so well, then Okogie is a pretty interesting counter then.
Right? Yeah.
I don't know who it'll be. It might be Torian Prince.
That's what I was thinking too, or. You know, or you could go Beverley or Beasley. It's just so.
I don't know, man.
I mean, it's just a not need to go big situation.
Beasley against Milwaukee sounds like a death wish.
But the thing, you want Vanderbilt on Giannis, right? But
yes.
You're obviously going to start Cat.
Or Torian Prince on Giannis. I know you scoff at that, but no, Finch totally. Likes him against big wings.
But if the starting lineup is Giannis and Connaughton, who's Cat guarding then? If you're starting Prince.
Right.
Or Vanderbilt right. on Giannis, like, who are you? Is Cat Carter Connaughton? No, I think
what Giannis will feel like a walk in the park after Valanciunas. I'll tell you that right now. Well, I mean, Cat doesn't mind quick. He does not like size.
Well, Giannis is pretty physical too.
I know. Giannis is pretty amazing.
I think what it does.
But at least there's no shame in that, you know.
Right. I think it has to be Cat on Giannis.
It does. I mean, but there again, you know, there goes those upset possibilities. I mean, again, it depends.
Yeah. It's shaking out to be a more unique Milwaukee matchup, I guess, than.
Right. And I like that idea. But you're right. I mean, the whole rotation thing, we're going to have fun. You know, it's so much fun for the entire year until he settles it down, you know.
Well,
and I hope he never.
We thought it was going to be a fun puzzle last year, too. And then, you know, Saunders couldn't.
Well, that's because everybody got hurt and Saunders isn't the coach Finch's.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. There are two things.
I still think, though, Ryan messed up the rotations last year and failed at the puzzle that was the rotations. But I think. Even with health, that was an unsolvable roster to create rotations for.
And this maybe too.
And I mean, that's what I was going to say. I think this roster is also unsolvable in terms of rotations. That's why we're talking. That's what we've been talking about right now. That's why it's going 11 deep. It's not.
I will give you credit. I mean, you used to give me credit all the time about my Rubio.
I used to give you credit
early last.
No
year.
More credit. Huh? No more credit ever. Years ago.
Well, all I'm saying is. I think you've given me more credit than I've given you over the past months.
Yeah, give me some credit.
And it's time for me to say, well, I mean, you have talked about the power forward role.
I have talked about that for 3 years. That's true.
Yeah, but this year is the year when the rubber meets the road not having a power forward didn't matter as much in the scheme last year and the year before, for that matter, really, if you get right down to it, you know.
Well, and the team sucked.
Yeah. And also that they didn't, the way they played,
yeah,
you know, now that power forward is often the low man, you know. And so it does matter if Cat is out on the perimeter, who is going to get the offensive rebounds? I mean, that wasn't such
take
an
away
issue
the offensive
year.
Rebounds. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, who's going to get the defensive rebounds? Right. Exactly. And so.
And McDaniels is apparently bad at it. I mean, what a bummer. Two rebounds last night again.
Yeah. And some of that has to do with who he guards, though. I mean, he was.
Yes. Right. I agree.
The Pelicans do. I mean, they're also.
But McDaniels,
unless you want to put three guys on Valanciunas,
right,
then it didn't matter who, you know, nobody needed to go inside.
Right.
Valanciunas owned the boards on his own.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times last night was that ball getting tipped in the air by Valanciunas or three other Wolves to see who would get it? And how many times, probably 50% of the time, the one Pelican among four players got the ball.
Right. Well, but that tipping part is, I had been somebody very firmly in the, you know, and I'd even sparred with some people on Twitter about the idea that, like, you know, McDaniels has a terrible defensive rebounding rate. He did last year. And I was like, okay, get like context, guys. He's guarding the ball, whatever. I don't think he's actually a bad rebounder. Like, if he's out guarding Luka, he's not going to be down there to go get the defensive rebound when Luka shoots it. But what I think is proving to be more accurate is that I was in part wrong about that as well, where he might not have a strong rebounding skill set, because what we're seeing now is, yes, he's guarding Brandon Ingram a lot, but sometimes he isn't because he's out there with Josh Okogie or Jared Vanderbilt and they're there.
Let's put him on a scale. I still think the dude isn't 200 pounds.
Oh, no.
And if you're playing the four
right.
in the NBA and you're not 200 pounds, nobody can give you shit about not rebounding.
True, but you would hope for more. I think his rebound totals are four, six, and two.
Name me the reliable 195-pound rebounders in the NBA. You know, I mean, maybe Connaughton for that matter. I mean, I have no idea how
old. You were just saying yesterday we were watching it that he looked bigger.
I love him. I love him.
Yeah. I don't know. It's...
He might be 201.
part of my McDaniels, I'm just saying I brushed over that in my McDaniels assessment for this season. You know what I mean?
And, fair enough. Yep.
And I'm optimistic it'll improve. But what I was going to say is he's not grabbing the rebounds and often tipping them. And that's part of that was part of the problem against, you know, the
that is true. He is not. Whereas and to Vanderbilt's credit, he is a grabber of rebounds.
Right. Man, that one he got, the offensive rebound, but
one of the best.
I was right in front of us too at the game. I was like,
I mean, he practically over half his body wound up on Valanciunas' shoulders, which means, I mean, Valanciunas is a legit 7 feet.
Know.
He's listed at 6'11", but there's no way that dude is not 7 feet. And so
I think the solution, Britt, I think part of the solution at the power forward position is you got to go Vando more. And we haven't really seen it. And, you know, this is fun, I guess will be funny for some people coming from me, but I think you got to try some more minutes with Vando out there with that front group and let him space to the corner and let him shoot.
And you know what? If D'Lo is hot, they can get away with it.
Mm-hmm. True.
The reason why it isn't working right now is because the offense is broken because your $30 million guy
right.
is playing worse than Ricky Rubio did when he was in the lineup last year.
Right.
I mean, that's terrible. They're not 3-0. In fact, I wrote this in the column today. If D'Lo gave you anything last night, either shooting or passing, they're 3-0.
Right.
I really think it would have been the difference because – New Orleans didn't have to worry about it. They stopped worrying about him.
They wanted him to shoot.
How many times was he wide open?
Yeah. It was well, yeah, let's wrap on that. I mean,
it's a shame,
yeah.
You know, because I don't like him as a player much. And whenever I know I have that inherent bias, I want to bend over backwards to be open-minded, and my open-minded look right now is that he sucks.
Well, know? How about the other side of the spectrum of it, where I was sitting here all summer like, big year for D'Lo coming, big year for D'Lo. And then it's like, he's like, contract year, and he comes out in the preseason, and it's like, this dude's going to average 22
really
a game.
Good. He looks,
you know,
really good, right.
And I'm sitting there last night at the game being like, man, what has happened in these first three games is almost completely deleting what I couldn't even remember where my optimism was coming from. It's been so bad. And I don't want to overreact to three games. So I think we, generally speaking, should hold somewhat firm to our, you know, preconceived notions that are based on a bigger sample size. But,
well, not only that, but he is not, even D'Lo's worst year was light years better than what he's playing like right now. I mean,
but
the dude,
he's
may
playing
not
like
have a
he's
great
playing
year.
Like Ryan Saunders, D'Angelo Russell right now.
Exactly. And that
I
is,
thought there was with, no shot that was going to be the case.
Exactly. And Finch, I mean, Finch retreated into the he started off, everybody's got a slump, and he's got it off the end of the slump. That's the old let me buy some time and see if, you know, he gets his, you know,
hey,
makes this work
to
out.
To his credit, man, like, And I
know he cops to it. He cops to it.
Yeah, right. Like Ryan didn't do that. Like the it's very public record. I feel like at this point that relationship was not copacetic between Saunders and Russell.
Right.
You know, and we need to remain open minded that Finch is going to handle this better than Saunders did, or that Russell's going to handle it better than he did previously. Two way street.
And again, I mean, we talk about this with Cat all the time. We talk about sooner or later, he's making everybody's decisions for them, right. You know. For some reason, that's a hard thing for me to say, decisions for him. But D'Lo is the same way. D'Lo is on the knife's edge. He is going to be important to this team, or he's going to be gone. In 2 years or a year, you know,
or less.
And yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's a real polarization on D'Lo. You know, people who like him, love him. People who don't like him, hate him. And so I have no idea what the real, you know, the smart, you know, no emotional sentiment is on D'Lo around the league. But my sense is that he's still not easy to move with that contract.
Right. No. And again, we got a lot more. I just actually got done just saying I think he's in for a pretty big game against Milwaukee.
I think he is actually in for, I've got to think, just on the law of averages, D'Lo is not the player he's been the last three games.
Right.
I'm not a fan, and I can concede that in a blink.
Right.
You know. And actually to actually say something nice about him for a change, I think his defense has actually been better than I expected. He still takes plays off, but he's getting deflections. He's in the system. He's one of those guys I was talking about, like when Okogie is going nuts, D'Lo gets animated and gets into it. You know, I think on balance, his defense is probably on a par as to what it was at the end of last year when I thought he was playing well. But I also think he has the capability of not being a gaping wound on defense if you have the right people in the lineup with him.
And an interesting leader in the mix here, too, that I think leads behind the scenes a lot more than certainly Kat does. And apparently that Ant now does. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a fact that D'Lo has clout within the people on his team. To be a leading influence in that sort of way. And I'm curious to see how, you know, how he uses that, because I mean, the one thing that I think will be different about D'Angelo Russell this season, the last season, is he's going to care a lot more.
And already has.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he, a lot more. I think he cares.
This isn't just, you know, I mean, he Finch is right to the extent he is in a slump.
I mean, I'd be shocked. My guess is the testiness came from number zero at practice today. And that's not me. I don't
think
know.
It might have come from number one.
I think Number one, like we're how we're using code names here.
No, I think Edwards. I don't think Edwards tells the press something, and then just goes and has fun the next day.
Yeah. I also would be curious. Well, this is another reason why it would have been why I am nostalgic for the days when we were in the locker room after the games. That would have been an interesting game to be in the locker room.
We would have known, right?
Yeah, we would have known. And now we're in, I guess, context for the listeners, you know, we're in the press conference room just waiting due to COVID protocols and such. So there's
it's awful.
Yeah.
But at least we sit in a good place.
True. It's like we're getting ready for the playoffs, you know, podium games. all right, Britt. Well, we did about an hour here, so we'll get back on here maybe after the Denver game on Sunday or Monday or something and see where this
whatever works.
Where this team is at. Again, check out Britt's piece. We always find a way to not talk about it that much.
Look, people will read it if they want to. If they don't, it's it's all right. You know, I mean, what I will say is that I'm totally off the cuff here. I just say whatever's on my mind for better or for worse. When I put something down on paper, I'm prepared to defend it indefinitely for a while. Mm. Definitely for a while.
Well, you didn't hold back on Cat.
Well, I mean, you know, I actually think I made a point of saying the things that where Cat is valuable. Cat is not trash,
right.
But Cat has some flaws that he has yet to address. And in year seven, that's becoming he won't change territory.
Right.
That's concerning.
Well, your kicker on the article, to read the last line as a tease, was put simply, it would be wonderful and a refreshing change of pace to root for Cat. If only he didn't make it so difficult. Which, sitting by you, knowing you well, I do know that is your opinion on Cat. You love watching Cat.
I do. I think he's very important. And I mean, he's given us 6 years of historic offense. True. You know, I mean, I've seen a lot of bad Timberwolves.
Right.
He is in the top 10, if not the top five, you know.
Well, check that out over at minpost.com. Britt's piece on Carl Anthony Towns, where the Timberwolves are at right now. Britt, thanks for doing the pod, and I won't see you tomorrow night because we're in Milwaukee, but I will see you at the game on Saturday.
Sounds good.
All right, until then, he's Britt at Britt Robson on Twitter. Follow me there at Dane Moore NBA. Until then, I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like no